The Around the NFL Podcast is in Greg's stable of boys.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with some heroes, Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I thought
you just forgot someone else entirely that's in the room.
I didn't, but usually if it's all four of us, it's a room filled with some heroes. But the room is filled, and the man sitting to Wes's left is a hero. He is the great, the iconic Dave Damashek.
The inimitable.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Come on, player.
I don't need that introduction.
What's up, Dave? Welcome back to the Around the NFL Podcast.
What's the poop, fellas? You guys are still doing this.
Still happening. It's still happening.
I'm happy for you guys. That's awesome.
Dave is riding high doing a media tour around the whole country after the wild success of Football Baby. This is it. Football Baby.
Listen,
I thought it would ride him to the top.
Who knew? I thought it would be a cute little thing to see which direction a 10-week-old, maybe it's a little, you know, questionable to do that with a child, to use them as a prop, but
yes.
I thought it would be fun just to see, you know, him tip, you know, if you haven't noticed, if you set an infant up, they eventually tip over to one side or the other. Therein lies the premise of Football Baby. But then he went 4-0. He went 4-0.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it,
check it out.
Google.
Yeah,
Football Baby.
Football Baby.
You'll find it.
Dave, I'm curious if you're – how old? 10 weeks?
10 weeks.
Because we have children very close together in age. As a noted media personality, where does it sit deep within you if Football Baby becomes more famous than you in the next couple weeks or months?
Well, I mean, we've already started to confront that difficult subject, you know, and I ultimately decided it was in my best interest to ride his coattails as much as I possibly can.
You're going to be the creepy stage dad guy?
Yeah, I'm all in now. I mean, listen, there were 48 hours of some real heavy thoughts there, and I don't mind telling you, things got pretty dark. I sat in my home, you know.
Glowering.
You know, my home, which is sparsely decorated, save a fold-out card table and a naked light bulb hanging from above. I stayed awake two nights in a row. I didn't get a wink of sleep with a bottle of whiskey, and emerged, I think, better for the recognition that, hey, Football Baby's where it's at.
It's savvy because, you know, good-looking man in his 40s, you know.
Wait, where are we going?
I'm just saying, this business has an expiration date for guys based on their looks. It's like now you got to kind of switch it over.
Speaking of good-looking men in their 40s, I just real quick, I got a mysterious package from England. The Royal Mail stamp is how I knew where it was from. No note, but it was John Hamm, who we had a casting associate say that I would play John Hamm if we casted.
Who was that associate?
Well, it was my wife, but that's beside the point. But whoever sent the John Hamm, sent the John Hamm head, and that's what it looks like. That's John Hamm.
Creepy.
Friend of yours, by the way, Dave, as we know. Whoever sent that, thank you, the mystery person. It's pretty creepy, and I could wear it actually on Halloween when the kids answer the door. I'm sure that won't look weird at all. I'll just be wearing like an open bathrobe and the John Hamm head.
That's no good.
No, not at all. Anyway, so we got a big show today. This is our Wednesday show. We get excited about it. Greg, you didn't have any comments about the John Hamm head.
I just laughed and enjoyed it. It would be pretty scary, though. If you really want to scare some kids, I think that'll do it.
That's the Mad Men slick-haired version of Hamm.
That's Hamm perfection. TD, behind the glass, how are you, buddy?
What's going on, guys? Really excited. Could anyone guess why?
Why?
Some kind of nerdy Marvel stuff.
Because you've got all your favorite podcasters in one studio.
Well, that's one option.
Something involving sci-fi or superheroes.
By the way, this is TD's hell, by the way. It's us, who we're always annoying TD to do various things at his job. And Damashek TD,
his arch nemesis, really. Yes.
Yes, adversarial relationship. It's almost like I would look under the table for a bomb or something. I don't know.
Normally, you would be wise to do that, but today, no. It's the start of the NBA season tonight. It started yesterday. It was some weak games. The Lakers played. Who cares about them? But also, too,
the champions played.
I was going to say, what if on a Sunday, if you really want to round it out, we should do this same group recording a podcast and while NFL football's on and no soccer. That would be hell for Black Tie.
But the other thing I'm really excited for, as Wes said, Marvel did announce the next 9 movies. The Around the NFL podcast movie hasn't been announced yet, but, you know, still in the works.
Enough. You know what? I saw that all over Twitter and Facebook. everybody trying to keep you guys in the know. With this stuff.
I'm trying to keep you guys
don't have
in the know.
I'm going
to
see the Avengers Part 2. Okay. I saw the first
one. There's now a 3 and 4 now.
That's where everybody's got to calm down. Let's see how the second one is first.
Please do not keep me in the know. I would rather wallow in my own ignorance on this issue.
TD, we have a lot of show to get to, so we should start rolling. We're going to go through Greg's midseason report that is up on NFL.com. We will talk about teams that we foresee falling off this season despite getting off to a nice start in the first half, and we'll also preview the Thursday night matchup, a key NFC South matchup between the Saints and the Panthers. Before we throw it to the news, just a heads up to everyone, next Wednesday, putting the pressure on the man behind the glass, we will be bringing back Win Greg's Toaster. And so if you want to be the man to take down Greg, the fan of the show, reach out to TD, at Producer TD, and we're going to have a screening process to make sure we have a real challenger for Greg. Greg wants a tomato can.
Well, I just want the same opportunities afforded Wesleyan.
That's so untrue.
Guys with like the knuckles dragging on the ground and gets like one question right so that Wes can keep his precious toaster until he had to face some real competition.
That's really not Sheck. How it was.
Well, Sheck couldn't
Sheck
answer more than a question
this.
Or two.
Sheck
He's
is
good
not built for this.
He wasn't built.
I don't like the pressure.
Yeah,
of
you're
it.
A deeply knowledgeable man with football and football history, but your
I think
ability
Sheck
to
knows
be quick
more.
In your responses.
I didn't like the clock. You know who wants a piece of? Well, he wanted it a Wesleyan, and I'm sure Greg Rosenthal would do just fine for him. Elliot Harrison of NFL Media Group. He fancies.
I love Elliot.
He's deep down. He's he would deny it, but he's slightly offended that Chris Wesleyan is considered the trivia expert.
You know what else offended
him? He wants to
him.
Take that down.
A couple last week, he walked into the newsroom and I made a joke as he was walking by that he had his shirt done an extra button, and he just gave me the dirtiest look and looked away. Not even no joke to it. It was just straight up, I hate you, man. Get out of my life. It was that type of thing.
So with Elliot, he could have the Trivia Master title, but he would have to take it from me in a dark alley.
Mm. That's
you boys.
That's anyway. The sort of heat we need, Black anyway, Tie. Put Wes versus EH, and let's see who wins.
Well, first, we need to – We don't. That's a side right. battle. We need to get Greg set up the Greg West Titanic rematch, and then maybe Harrison can take on the winner of that. This is all in the future, but for now we need Greg to get his feet wet.
Well, I've
as
said
the champion.
Buster Douglas is my. Is
he went
my,
into a diabetic coma I'm, like 8 months after
your
he
role
won the
model.
Title.
Yeah, he's my role model. That I just want to get fat, enjoy the world and women, and make a video game. I don't care. I've already done my big upset. I don't want a rematch. There's no win. There's no winning scenario in that.
At Producer TD, if you want to.
Or hashtag Greg's Toaster. Double G.
I don't appreciate that hashtag one bit.
Hashtag, well, listen, one day you will rise again, Wes.
Rosenthal's head is in the 100% right place. That's your move. Leon Spinks, when he beat Ali back in whatever it was, 78 or 79, the right move is to retire
right
there.
I tried to retire the game. A shadowy league figure that you know well by the name of Marvel is bringing this game back.
And no, that is not a window, TD, for you to bring up more Marvel stuff.
Well, John Marvel is a big Marvel fan.
He was a grown man.
Well, he is, as am I, but we're big Marvel fans. All right. Wes, you got to let yourself be in other people's reality sometimes. Gotcha. It's okay.
All right. So anyway, TD, let's get to some news.
It's your boy.
Wow. Bucky Brooks drop. I like that.
Not a Bucky. I see what you want.
Oh, Jay-Z.
To let people know that is Jay. And yeah. A lot of talk recently and who's who boy and that and this. So I just thought I'll add a little Jay to the proceedings.
It's your boy.
Dead on Bucky Brooks.
I can't imagine. So that's why you don't have any time to do any production on the DDFP is because you're getting Jay-Z what? Sound all the time.
By the way, give us a plug for Dave's podcast.
That's it. DDFP, Dave Damashek football program. Couple times a week in season. We kibitz about this, that, and the other. You know,
it is. It
baby,
is the podcast from which this podcast was
birthed. Yeah. So. Famously, Mark and I.
We're like the Joey.
We owe an eternal debt.
Friend.
The debate club. Yeah, it started out with Sessler and Hanzus coming in on the debate club. Then Greg Rosenthal trickled in. Then came Wes from the island. And it was a terrific time.
Now we're Joni Loves Chachi.
All right, so let's get to the news. We'll start in Washington. And I guess it would be nice to get a little talk on that Monday night game, which was a classic between the Redskins and the Cowboys, where Colt McCoy stepped up and played a very nice game and led the upset victory. However, RG3 now is on the horizon. Robert Griffin III, who has been out since week two with a dislocated ankle, returned to practice in full on Wednesday, split first-team reps with McCoy. Jay Gruden, as he's been during this whole process, has played this extremely coy. He said that this is more mental than physical now with Griffin getting him up to speed with the Redskins playing the Vikings on Sunday, and then they have a bye. There was also, before we came upstairs, a report floating around that Griffin will start against the Vikings, but we don't know if that's true or not yet. However, Griffin is very much back on the radar right now. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
First team reps. That says he's starting unless there's a setback.
Well, he split them.
Right, but yeah. He's getting first. If he wasn't going to start.
He's starting unless something happens.
Unless there's a setback, he's starting.
I like the people that were like, well, should he be starting? Maybe we should ride Colt McCoy for another week.
Well, first of all, on a human level, you got to be thrilled for Colt McCoy, right? Wasn't that a nice thing?
You know, even though, speaking of retiring right away, he should just get out of the mix. That's the perfect answer for him.
Yeah, especially doing it in Texas, of all places, for him to do that was great. I always thought it was hokum that, you know, the notion that anybody outside, you know, that should be considered. I wonder, though, with Jay Gruden, how does this affect him in the locker room that he more or less advocated for Kirk Cousins, that Cousins gets it a little bit better, he's a better fit, and immediately Cousins flames out and now is off the radar. Colt McCoy obviously is ahead of him. So what does that mean then? How do you trust him if you're RG3 or anyone else? Yeah, you're the guy who thought Kirk Cousins was a good idea.
It's a good question. There was some "I wish you weren't a liar" stuff going on here. He said this week, "I never strayed from my answer that RG3 was the guy."
I wish you weren't a liar.
He strayed far from that answer right about after Kirk Cousins' best game of the year. And he said, look, I'm not ruling anything out. Kirk Cousins could remain the starter all year.
I feel like the Gruden family in general, whether they're good coaches or not, it's probably not because all the players are completely trusting of them. You know what I mean? John Gruden's the same sort of thing where half the players seemed annoyed at him all the time because he would be one way in public and a different way privately and always had different answers, and Jay's kind of the same way.
Let's say RG3, though. The thing that's everybody – the argument becomes sort of simple if you just say he'll never be right. Next subject, you know, he's just never going to be able to stay healthy, so he's not worth talking about. Let's say 2 years from now he hasn't missed a game because of injury. Is he a great quarterback? Is he a good one? Is he inconsistent? Where's he at?
I think that's the biggest riddle in the NFL right now.
He's the hardest.
But I think people always say it's not worth discussing because he's never going to be healthy, so why indulge him?
I think we don't know what he is. I mean, over the summer I went back and watched his rookie year film. I remembered at the time thinking it was mostly him. After watching it, I thought it's mostly Kyle Shanahan and the offense he put him in. I mean, he did extend a lot of plays. He was accurate. I mean, I remember the Giants defensive players saying, look, this guy's the hardest guy we've ever played against. So a lot of that was him, but that offense was so easy for him to perform in when he did it. I don't know who he is right now.
My instinct is he'll be like a Jay Cutler type, which is that middle of the road that someone's always – making a case for him. Someone's always making a case against him. But this Washington team this year, I don't know. They could be playing some meaningful at Minnesota this week. I think they're going to win that. They get a bye week. Then they're home for Tampa Bay. We could be looking at the 5-5 Redskins in week 12 going to San Francisco and being right in the mix.
Interesting. All right, other quarterback news from that Monday game. Tony Romo, as we know, suffered the back injury. It's being called a contusion, not related to the disc where he's had the surgery. His week 9 status is in doubt. First thing I just want to throw out to you guys, and Dave, I'll throw it to you. Do you think Romo should have been back in that game? And were you at all weirded out by how hands-on Jero was about the whole situation?
Well, Jerry, you know, likes to be in the middle. He likes to be in the eye of the storm or where the cameras are pointed, that's for sure, and which isn't to disparage him. That is who he is.
Good answer.
Yeah, well, I tagged that just in case one of those shadowy league figures happens to catch that.
Yeah, because they couldn't have possibly relayed the news that Romo's ready to play over Garrett's headset. He had to be there in person to deliver it.
Well, in the moment, I was thinking, wow, this is insane, but I thought he had just suffered a disc injury, and I thought, what kind of insanity is this to thrust him back out onto the field? But then it's just a contusion, and they give him a shot. It really is one of those things that I feel like – if you're in that moment, you don't know if he can drive the ball until you see him try to throw the ball. So I don't think it's a terrible idea. And the thing I'll say about putting Brandon Whedon going with him, if Brandon Whedon gets picked off, knowing what we know now, it's a different story. If Brandon Whedon gets picked off in that last minute and the Redskins win, then people will go crazy about that. You know, they should have. Romo said he was ready to go. They didn't put him back in. Terrible call by Jason Garrett.
My opinion on it is that Jerry, in his mind, he could see the Sports Illustrated Super Bowl video for the Cowboys, and this was like one of the big turning point moments of the season where Romo goes down and then Willis reads it back and Jerry comes downstairs and says, you put him back in, and then they lead him to the win.
There was that feeling. Like, yeah, it all fever seemed, was rising.
And clearly, Jerry Jones, who we said loves the spotlight, wanted to be part of this, what seemed like a big moment happening, and it kind of farted out. But it's like, in general, like, Whedon was playing well, so he should have been in the game. But what do you guys think? Should Romo play this week?
My takeaway from that whole incident was that there's no bigger cream puff in America than the modern sports writer. They would have gone back in time and tried to convince Willis Reed never to come out of the tunnel, because if you play a sport, you might hurt yourself.
Wait, who was mad about him
coming
back in the game?
Oh, Twitter was just crazy. Like, this is dangerous. He could get hurt. Well, you don't know from 2,000 miles away. Maybe we ought to trust the team doctors over a random sports writer who's not within 1,000 miles of the stadium.
There is kind of a hazy moral – not that – look, he should play if they said he could play.
It does get hazy.
They're keeping score.
Okay,
they're keeping score. You play to win if the doctor clears him.
Sure. But there is something weird about that. Oh, it's of course it's cool. You can get a gigantic Toradol pain-killing injection in your back, which if we just got that city around, like, we would be knocked out and high. And but that's cool. You can do that every week. He did it the week before against the Giants, too.
And he underwent an X-ray, which would not be able to tell what's going on with the disc. It's the MRI. So, you know, we don't know really if the Cowboys were even sure if the back was re-injured. That's why it gets a little
I don't
tricky.
Think he's going to play this week either, just listening to Jones talk.
In the moment, though, I'll say that it's hard to make that judgment right then and there, and I guess that's why a head coach gets head coach loot. But it does seem to me that as an organization, as a head coach, and as Jerry Jones, if you said, you know what, Tony, I love that you want to get back out there, but I'm not going to let – I care about you as a guy – I would think that would go miles for the remainder of the 2014 season for the Cowboys to feel like they're in it. I think that matters. Mm. To feel like that, the good vibes of Seattle were a major factor in them going all the way last year. That feel good atmosphere, we're a family, works, I feel like. And Jason Garrett doesn't cut that figure of a lovable head coach, you know.
And it almost flipped the other way if the Redskins had just fallen off that fumble after they blasted Romo. Yeah. They would have won the game right there, and it would have just felt like this huge disaster.
Absolutely. The New York Jets are moving away from Geno Smith, perhaps for good. Rex Ryan officially announced Monday that the quarterback will be benched in favor of Michael Vick for Sunday's matchup against the Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium. Ryan had this to say, I feel right now that this is the right move. Not a very tough decision, Wes, for a guy that played one of the worst quarters of football in the history of mankind on Sunday, right?
Yeah, John Idzik came out this week and said he doesn't know if he is a franchise quarterback. Well, we didn't need him to tell us that. The fact that you yanked him is proof that you don't know if he's a franchise quarterback. And now we've seen Geno Smith melt down in two different years for extended periods of time. It just points to something's not clicking with that guy.
And
I mean, he can move the ball at times, but Just too many meltdowns.
Yeah, and Idzik, I really think he dug his own grave with that press conference on Monday where, you know, the New York media, which was already out to get him before this, seized on this as a moment, and he did himself no favors by the way he presented himself and didn't give any answers to any of the questions that they had. So he seems to be caught in a cyclone of doom right now in New York. I'd be surprised, Woody Johnson, who very much – cares what's in the papers. I'd be surprised if these kept around. I think they're going to clean house after a 3-13.
But is Mike? I don't think he's going to keep the job for good. Michael Vick, that is. I think he'll have it for a week or two because Michael Vick's been a disaster when he's been on the field. I feel like if he had looked good in the off season at any point, they would have been happy to play Michael Vick a little earlier. But it doesn't seem like he was practicing well, and that kind of hasn't been talked about. I mean, Michael Vick right now is in the top 10 in the league in fumbles this year. He's played five quarters. He's just four fumbles and how many interceptions? He's been a disaster the two times he's stepped out there. So if he goes to Kansas City this week and he's terrible, I think they're only going to stick with him for a week or two and go back to Geno.
First of all, Michael Vick is going to go to Kansas City, and he is going to emerge victorious with the Jets is one big prediction.
As
for
Wes
you
raises his arms
yeah,
in the
Wes
air as well.
Yeah, Wes picked the Jets to win, too, already. Them. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but what the heck?
Well, I picked this when I thought I was alone against the rest of America. The
Davey.
Narrative all week is the Jets are such a train wreck, they can't do anything right. They're embarrassing. Idzik's press conference just turned the whole country against them.
All accurate.
They had one of the worst, most embarrassing games. They're just a mountain of mess. I think
that's
usually
fair.
When the whole country decides on something like this, the opposite happens.
They're not a talentless bunch. They're faulty
totally
at QB
agree.
And have a terrible secondary.
Yeah, but the Chiefs are good, and
that's
they're at home. So
Chiefs
I don't
are
feel
average.
Chiefs are a good team.
They're average. They're as average as an NFL team gets.
That they're playing well every week.
They're as average as an NFL team gets.
To continue my Vic point, though, 46% completions. He's averaging 3.6 yards per attempt. So that's not even in the Gabbert zone. We need
small sample size.
We need to create a new zone.
That's scary.
Very small sample
size. Sub-Gabbert zone? That is
56
terrifying.
Throws. I mean, that's
very
something.
Small
for
sample
for the record, though, I'm with Hyanzeus 100%, who made the point, I think it was last week on Twitter, that Idzik's terrible drafting is going to cost Rex Ryan his gig, and it just seems loco. Is there any chance that Woody will see it this way and say, Idzik,
no.
Look, you're the problem. We retain Rex.
Here's the thing that everyone – I always defend Rex, but shouldn't the fact that he has absolutely no clue what to do with an entire half of the football, which is offense, which is probably the more important half when you get down to it, matter? I mean, that should matter something that he has nothing to do with it and no clue what to do.
And the tweet that I sent out that referring to, Dave, I got a lot of feedback from people saying, you know, boo-hoo for Rex. And my feeling on it is I actually do think Rex needs to go as well, but I don't think it's fair because Rex has had plenty of time now to build this organization on some level. He's been here 6 years. But I think it's unfair if Rex gets fired and Idzik gets to hang around because Geno Smith set the franchise back 2 years.
Clean
house. That's a major miss. Sheldon Richardson's the only thing he ever got right. And, you know, that doesn't get you too excited. I think he botched the Darrelle Revis situation twice. So, in my mind, I think Idzik's got to go. But it all depends on what Woody wants to do from a patient standpoint.
I would like to say this, though, Rosenthal. The idea that the coach – in my brain, I've always thought, that guy is clearly not engaged at all on the other side of the ball. Jason Garrett, I don't think, has a lot to do with defensive schemes, though, in Dallas. John Fox, I'm sure, is not a part of Gase and Peyton's sessions and – so on. You know, I don't think Sean Payton is down there in
I think Sean
NOLA
Payton's
doing
maybe getting involved. But you're right. That's a fair point that most offensive guys aren't too. But Rex really seems like he's totally hands-off. And he hasn't done good hiring. Then it's your job to hire the right people. And he's hired Tony Sparano and Brian Schottenheimer and Marty Morningway.
The Jets will fire him and he'll turn someone else's team around.
The Buccaneers have cut loose Mark Barron, their first-round pick, the number 7 overall pick in the 2012 draft was traded at the deadline on Tuesday to the St. Louis Rams in exchange for a 4th and 6th-round pick, according to Rap Sheet. What would you guys take away from the Mark Barron era in Tampa Bay?
He was drafted to be a hard-hitting guy who had forced turnovers, and he never forced turnovers in Tampa Bay. He was not a playmaker, and that's exactly what he was built to be, which is why he was taken in the top 10 picks of the draft. People who are smarter than me have said he's a better fit for the Rams scheme.
He's not a bad player. He just, it's like, oh, he was a top 10 pick? I mean, sometimes you'll get safeties like that that are fourth-round picks that are good at kind of stopping the run. He's not really that good in pass coverage. He's just one of those, like, oh, what? And they also took him one pick before Luke Kuechly.
Oof.
And that was at a time when people thought they were maybe going to take Kuechly.
They could have had Luke Kuechly and Levante David.
That would have been cool.
Here's what's fascinating. First of all, dig up our pals Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks and all the other scouts. Dig up their cold case files on Mark Barron. He was about as guaranteed to be a big-time NFL player as anybody in that draft. But the other factor that's fast, it's the same thing we saw with USC about 8 years ago. Guys that emerge from the dominant college program, it's hard to figure out how big a factor they were in when they were surrounded by other blue chip guys, Matt Leinart effect and so on. A lot of Bama guys. Some have turned out to be great, but a lot of others have been complete busts. Most Trent Richardson to begin with.
Yeah, that's almost all of them, it feels like. A couple have been okay, but
Alabama's. Well, Ingram's turned it around a little bit. Ooh. I mean, until then, you had two guys in a row who were just
– Sunday night was a showcase for Alabama backs. Eddie Lacy had 182 yards from scrimmage.
To me, this move, though, is also Lovie Smith and Jason Light, their GM, just being like, hey, all those guys that Shiano and Dominic took, they stink. We're going to try to get rid of them, like Vincent Jackson – or Doug Martin or Barron's like, we didn't choose those guys. Let's just dump them. We want it to be clear what we think of them.
Because Anthony Collins and Michael Johnson are working out so well.
What number pick was Mark Barron again?
Number 7.
The number 7 pick in the 1999 draft. Who was that? Pop quiz.
How would we know?
I don't know.
Michael
Bailey.
Oh, nice transition.
Well done.
Wow.
That's gonna just
look who just sits back and shifts his eyes until he gets his praise.
Victory.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
Champ Bailey is retiring after 15 seasons in the NFL. Champ, who he came up with the Redskins, was a stud there. Went to the Broncos, was a stud there. Didn't work out with the Saints. Got cut in the summer. Didn't catch on with another team. So the 12-time Pro Bowl selection hangs him up. 207 starts, a first ballot Hall of Famer, right? No doubt.
We don't know what a first ballot Hall of Famer is, but you would have to think he ends up there eventually. I thought Marvin Harrison was a first ballot Hall of Famer, so who knows?
I wonder what went on there.
Yeah.
Wasn't it cool that he retired on the trade deadline day? Because he was involved in
that. He could have been moved, yeah. Hmm. Oh, right.
He was involved in one of the few challenge trades that we ever see, him and Clinton Portis.
One of the biggest and really best trades of the last, decade or two.
Worked for both teams.
Worked out pretty well for both teams, although Denver, I think, be especially.
It would never happen today.
Why not? Just
because running
back?
Shut down corner for a running back.
I wish it would. That is the one thing pro football lacks versus all the other big-time sports. I'll say two things. One, kudos to Champ's parents. It's not his given name, but at an early age, he was Champ, and his brother is Boss. And
what?
They both wind up playing pro football. But imagine if they didn't. It's the same thing I always say about Merlin Olsen's parents. That infant emerges, and they decide, let's name him after a fictional medieval wizard. What if he ends up being a janitor? Hey, Merlin. Stall 3 is clogged. You mind working your magic on that one there, friend?
Get your magic wand out, Merlin.
Hey, champ. Clean up on aisle 7, you know?
That it becomes a sarcastic.
Yeah, so condescending.
And the other thing is with that, though, the first ballot Hall of Fame thing I always think about is, again, it goes back to this. The voters of who goes into the Hall of Fame really do make this vote up on Mount Pius when they do it. Like, no, he's a Hall of Famer, you understand. He's not a first ballot Hall. Is he in the Hall of Fame or not? What do you mean? What is your measurement that you're doing? And the guys who get in on the first ballot hold themselves up on a higher plane than anybody who just gets a gold jacket. But the voters doing that move of, I'll vote for him. Don't worry about that. I'm just not going to give him my first vote. I don't want him getting a big head, you understand.
But they are charged with that responsibility.
It's ridiculous.
I think he will, though, just to predict. He will. Because they love the long tail 12, 13-time Pro Bowlers, which I'd prefer the guys who are really dominant for 5, 6, 7 years. Champ Bailey he maybe wasn't quite that guy. He was 3 first-time All-Pros. I mean, he was terrific. He's a no-brainer, but he wasn't like Darrell Revis was in his peak.
By the way, Champ, if someone calls you Champ, it's one of the more condescending things. One that I hate is when people call me Big Guy. It's like basically, hey, fatty. That's the way I take it. So, you know, don't call me Champ, like waiters and mechanics.
I always wondered how big guys actually feel about
it. I take it personally.
Guys. Especially playing basketball. It's the usual thing. Like, hey, who's
the big guy? Well, that's different. It's like if a 19-year-old waiter or something, is like, what do you need, big guy? It's like
Chief, Sport, Ace, Goose, Biscuit.
I've got a son on the way here, and I'm really trying to think of names.
You do?
I got nothing. And I need something.
Oh, there's
Champ's
no
pretty good.
Champ.
This is my ballywick. Please come to me.
BJ Upton. Do you know what that stands for?
Tell me.
Boss Man Jr. It fits
really?
You. It fits
right.
You. BJ Russell, Boss Man Jr. Yep. That's the coolest name ever.
That's awesome.
BJ Rosenthal.
And Justin just got Justin.
I know. I want to be Boss Man Jr.
Justin is a far superior player, though, so maybe it should be Justin Rosenthal.
Eh, no, it's not like that good.
All right, so that's it. That's what's happening. Let's now move. It is the midseason point of the season, right? It's hard to figure this out. Cause it's
well, as
weeks.
We're taping, I think it would be the perf. That is exactly midseason. There's the 8 weeks, and we're halfway to week nine.
On NFL.com, we have our 2014 NFL midseason report, and there's all sorts of content from us and others on .com and NFL Now. And Dave, you doing anything midseasony?
Nah.
Ooh, awkward. However,
no, I cast my vote for the whatever the.
Oh,
MVP,
your picks the rest of the year. Yeah.
Oh,
we weren't even involved in
that. Yeah, we
that.
Were.
We would, they
we've been getting – Ali downstairs has been sending us emails like, please, guys, we need this.
Oh, all right, my fault.
Let's
we
get,
were,
let's
we
get
were
on top
emailed
of
on it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to do it as soon as we get downstairs. Anyway, but so
– you can see Dave's picks, though, for the Super Bowl alongside
Ow!
Luminaries
well,
like
what
Judy
we did
Batista
was
and
what,
Michael Silver.
What Bucky Brooks and I did was – because it's the week when the college football Final Four gets unveiled for the first time – we did what's going to be the Final Four of the NFL, not based on where they're seated currently because that goes off of the math of it, but just who do you think is going to wind up in that one? It's a fun conversation to have, I think.
I don't like any options of going off your preseason pick, like unless your team's a tank.
I kind of agree with that.
You just have to stick with it. I had the Patriots and the Packers. It's like, all right, they're in the mix.
Same except
thing.
To
you're
say
not allowed
this.
To change.
Except this. You could see this in the preseason as a good matchup, but now that you've watched these teams play, Broncos at Colts would just be just dandy stuff. I mean, how can you
I
imagine
see
how
a rematch of Steelers Colts?
I do. Well, I mean,
that
if,
was
if,
a
if
fun
my,
game to watch.
It was.
It was more fun than the Broncos Colts game earlier in the year.
Call me a bore, but I want another Brady Manning for all the marbles. One more.
No, all right. We've only got so Give much of them more. Left. Yeah why not?
I mean. Enough.
Like Brady said, I can't wait to see what I do when I'm his age next year.
All right. So, Greg, you wrote a piece on our site, Winners and Losers from the First Half of the Season. Really good stuff. I enjoyed it.
Dan always condescendingly pretends that he reads our columns.
Listen, champ,
BJ.
I'm reading it, all right?
No, call him BJ from now on.
So, yeah, Greg, you broke it down into two categories, moving up and moving down. So why don't we start with the tops of the list? So first moving up, you talk about the playoff races. You're excited about the playoff races.
Well, I am kind of the playoff picture guru or whatever. I always write
you
about
are.
It on
you
the site. I'm
stuff.
Into it. 11 winning teams right now in the AFC. So that's fun.
Ow.
And then in the NFC, you've got the 49ers, Saints, and Seahawks all out of the playoff mix at midseason. So it just sets up for a delicious stew. And a lot of the good teams are all playing against each other down the stretch.
I'm going to cherry pick here. Also, free agent wide receivers. And, Wes, you have a piece up, your biggest free agent signings in the NFL right now. Right at the top of the list, you have two guys, Bang, Golden Tate, and Steve Smith. Can't believe Steve didn't get number one on the list.
That's how good Golden Tate has been.
I
told you last podcast I'd put him in a top 10 list for MVP.
You guys kind of knocked the Broncos just assuming that they could easily replace Eric Decker, and they pretty much have done it with Emmanuel Sanders.
Absolutely.
I
was dead wrong about Emmanuel Sanders. Now, in my defense, we did not see this guy in Pittsburgh. He wasn't making plays in traffic and burning people deep like he's been in Denver.
Well, that's right.
You can attest
there, there is a weird phenomenon that happens in most sports, and it's hard to put your finger on what happens from place to place. The easy one is Emmanuel Sanders hailed Peyton and, you know, the work ethic and everything else.
That
and,
is also the correct one, by
well,
the way.
Well, that might be true. There's probably something to that, that he coaches up his receivers better
than
Ben does.
But there is a counter to that that no one ever really does discuss, which is there are certain receivers that play better with a freelancing quarterback like Roethlisberger. Emmanuel Sanders,
that's
I mean,
true.
Would Santonio Holmes – I mean, listen, his departure – wasn't the greatest from Pittsburgh, but in his time there's not been a guy until really that now the emergence of Antonio Brown who worked better than Santonio. That they had a chemistry, which is basically when the play broke down, Santonio knew how to get back to him and find Roethlisberger's spot, and Roethlisberger would consistently connect with him, and Santonio would pay it off by making plays
to me,
after
the
catch.
That's why they got to re-sign Randall Cobb.
I was going to say the same thing.
He's that guy. He's the guy when the play breaks down. It's just the two of them – figure it out.
They have a mind meld when the play breaks
did
down.
Did you put
Rodgers looks for Cobb?
Did you put Deshaun Jackson on the list? I need to check out this
He's
list.
He's honorably though. Mentioned.
Hmm. Brandon LaFell also has been a nice little
honorably
a
mentioned.
A lot of good wide receivers.
Greg, you also have rookie wide receivers on your list of the movers. Kelvin Benjamin, Sammy Watkins, Brandon Cooks, John Brown, all guys. Bottom of the list, your last two moving up entries. It gets me excited. Never thought I'd see this. Can never predict the NFL season. John Elway and Kyle Orton back-to-back at the bottom of the list. Kyle Orton.
How good has Kyle Orton been?
The quiet warrior,
I mean,
you put it.
He,
Sessler will be upset.
If you didn't know who he was, you would think – I don't know. I'm trying to think of who has he been as good this year? It's only been four games, but he's got 8 yards per attempt, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions.
Who's he been?
He's been very solid.
Good as Eli Manning and Carson Palmer.
Right. He's been better than Kyle Orton ever was before.
He's been Jay Cutler.
Well, it's fun to look at him in a year where we saw a lot of young QBs play backup to start the season to these journeyman guys, McNown and so on. Orton, who was on no roster at the start of the season, has outperformed all those guys who teams foolishly thought, oh, yeah, we're going to roll with this 34-year-old journeyman. And, yeah, he's a better option than the young big arm kid.
He's making people money. I mean, he's going to play another 5 years if he wants to, Orton. And he's going to keep Marone and their GM, Whaley, in their jobs for next year. Basically, Orton will be responsible for that.
He's going to be responsible for an extension on their house.
I don't know about that.
Now we look at moving down. John Idzik's at the top of the list. We talked about him. I cannot talk about the Glacier anymore unless you have something else to add, Greg. Tell me about the NFC
South.
Bad
sweater choices, even.
Oh, he's just the worst.
He's one of those guys, the less he says, I feel like that press conference was a big advertisement for why he shouldn't be a leader of an organization.
What's the Jason Whitlock line that you sometimes cite that – Mike Tannenbaum is sitting back in his chair, rolling a B, cackling.
Cackling and rolling a blunt.
Our friend of the podcast, Mike Tannenbaum.
How did you feel, though, Hanses, as a Jets fan?
See, now
watching,
we are talking. Yeah.
I don't want you, but did you, the patronizing, the Jets fans deserve better than this. And he also, black tie, if no one in this
we
room
do,
gets
though.
It, the tone that he took, like, a lot of responsibility. I've let down.
No, that was bad.
I've let down countless New Yorkers.
They're
like, do you think you're Spider-Man? Are you with your talk about the responsibility that is too great for you to understand?
And then, you know, saying that he's, you know, I've won before and you haven't, he was like a money man.
When he was.
With Tampa and then Seattle.
Counting beans in Seattle.
Exactly. He's not that guy. The whole thing disgusts me. Anyway, so the NFC South, you have disappointed you, Greg.
Well, it always has been my sneaky favorite division, the NFC South. Probably because I kind of like the Saints, and I always kind of I always like Cam Newton, and the Falcons are underrated. I thought the Bucks were gonna be good. It's just, it's the worst they've ever been. This division, the NFL usually fans usually ignore this division anyways. This year they should.
Tomato cans.
They are. Mm. The Falcons are terrible.
See, you and Rosenthal and Wessling, they use their eyeballs to break down X's and O's. I use my gut, and my gut told me as a human being in August, all I needed to see was the first 90 seconds that Teva Smith walks into the Atlanta Falcons room there to kibitz with the 80 or so guys. And his team is, we got to get tougher, guys. That's it. They're going nowhere this year.
One of the more cringeworthy moments in Hard Knocks ever is that premiere where that was the entire basis of the episode, and it was just done in such a clunky manner. Like they had no idea how to get tough, but it was just like, we need to be tough.
We bring in Brian Cox and Mike Tice. Solves everything.
Talk about cringeworthy. I guess Damashek has a better window into – you know, the soul of humans and where they're going, because Dan watched that same program and took from it that this team's moral fiber is so hard, so great that I'm going to pick them to go to the playoffs.
I got sucked
so you
in.
You said that this, it convinced
Well, no,
you.
I definitely didn't cite the moral fiber of the team, but I did, as Greg, we've talked about that, it's very easy to get sucked into a team on Hard Knocks thinking they're going to be good. And
this year.
Yeah, and they were not good. They started out okay. But I don't know who said it today. This has been such a long podcast because Dave's involved. You know?
Oh, excuse me.
You know, if they would have won that game in England, they're in the mix.
The medium. That's right. But the medium is to talk, and yet I always get despaired for talking. It's a crazy.
Come on,
I don't understand.
All right. Finally, let's just go over. We want to talk about Seattle's invincibility. Wes, you decide what Greg should talk on. Or we Nick Foles' long-term viability. Let's talk about one of these.
I feel like Seattle's been done to death. Let's hear about Nick Foles. Will Nick Foles be the starter opening day next
year?
Yeah,
Greg.
Interesting.
No.
Ow!
I think he's going to continue playing like this, and I think if he continues playing like this, they're going to bring in at the least someone to compete with him, a good, strong
and
competitor.
Why?
Or draft someone.
And why?
Because he's not as good as
he
his numbers.
He can bring a tomato can off the street to put up those numbers in this offense.
Bring in Dennis Dixon or something from the old Oregon days.
What about Mark Sanchez?
G.J. Kinney.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't be shocked if Sanchez plays this year, the way things are going. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, that seems silly until you consider, you know, is Clowney going to go on Sunday? Because if Clowney goes and you have Watt
playing.
The crowd noise in Houston and everything – there's a chance that the Texans could take down the Eagles, and then the noise will really get loud out of Philly if Foles underperforms against a big pass rush.
I think the move is to bench him, like, after a win. Like, Chip Kelly, hey, we're scoring 40 points, but this guy stinks. We should be scoring 60.
Ooh,
that's
I like
the
that.
Chip Kelly
yeah.
genius move.
Only a genius would do that.
All right, gentlemen, so let's get into the discussion of what teams we see falling off in the second half. This is a mid-season show on the Around the NFL podcast. So this will be teams that are doing well that I guess, Greg, are if the season ended today, if you played that dumb game, they would be in the playoffs or near the playoffs.
Yeah, they have winning records.
They're doing okay.
Things are going well, and that could fall apart.
And now that's all going to fall apart. So what we did, we all went off independently. We sat down and combed through the numbers and the schedules and picked teams who might fall off. So the boss, we're going to start with you, Greg. Who is the team you see falling off in the second half this season?
Well, I'm cheating. I'm going to take two teams in the AFC.
Oh, come on.
Well, it's the same.
Bro.
All right. We'll start with the Dolphins then. The Dolphins and the Bills, like for many of the same reasons, good early in the season. But if you look at their road schedule the rest of the way, you have some automatic losses at Denver, at New England, and then at Detroit also in the mix. And then some very tough home games against the Chargers, Bills, and Ravens. So I think they've benefited from a pretty early season schedule. When the two of them face the Bills and the Dolphins in Week 11, that feels like an elimination game. Like, you have to win that game to get into the playoffs.
We always know the Dolphins are going to fall off in the second half, though.
I'm just saying, that's a brutal schedule.
Gutsy, you know? Even if it was a decent schedule or a favorable
schedule.
This
wasn't
schedule,
our
they were
bold prediction
it.
Segment or anything. This was just who's got a tough slate the rest of the way. Joe Philbin's fighting for his job.
I don't think either of those teams is going to the playoffs.
Well,
I'm with Greg.
That continues with the same tepid tone that Rosenthal established there. You want bold. Is that what you're asking for, Hanzu?
Yeah, give us something big.
You know who's going to fall off?
Who?
The Seattle Seahawks. They're already struggling, and everything is good. You know, Jeff Darlington on record this week. Oh, it's overrated. I went into the locker room, and Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman said there's no smoke here. So it must be true. And after surviving against Carolina, which is what they did, is survive in that game, they're going to get to 6-3 because they host the Raiders and then now the damaged New York Giants. So all these concerns will be long in the rearview mirror. But then look at what happens to their schedule. Listen to this brutal six-game stretch. At KC, Cardinals, at San Francisco on Thanksgiving night, which you know means the crowd's going to be jacked up. At Philly, then the Niners back in Seattle, then at Arizona.
Oof.
They're going to have to go, by my count, I think they have to go better than 500 in that six-game stretch to make the postseason, because if we assume six wins by the time they begin that, and then let's say they win their home game to close the season out at home against the Rams, that's seven wins. If they only go 3-3 in that slate, 10 wins I don't think gets them into the NFC postseason.
No, I agree. I think it's going to be 11 this year. It's a top-heavy – I mean, right now they're eighth. It's a top-heavy year. There's 11 AFC teams that have a winning record right now. It could be one of those years that a bunch of 10-6 teams don't get let in.
By the way, is it just me or is Russell Wilson approaching, even maybe going past Derek Jeter as far as the athlete that says nothing – that shuts down everything with this the most cliched responses possible, quite possibly now the most boring athlete in America.
It's Peyton Manning's title.
He already stole it.
Manning's much better.
Peyton drops a couple bits
Manning
in there.
Peyton Manning is the godfather of that role.
But he's got some bits, too, that he works in sometimes. He's got a little bit of an uncle humor thing going on.
Yeah,
Russell Wilson
bit.
Is just dry.
I agree with Russell Wilson,
incredibly boring.
He's always been. I don't think that's a new one, but you're right. I hate all the shutting down. And he's also the one that the media will always defend, kind of like we're damaged.
Talking about a league where a starting quarterback was ordered to cut his hair and shave his mustache.
It's a shame. The league is worse for sports is worse for the lack of personality and having it tamped down for the purposes of the team. It doesn't suit the individual, of course. Everybody, if they want to market themselves, should be Muhammad Ali or Charles Barkley or Shaq Fu. And instead, it does, you know, it's bad for the team. So then Russell Wilson behaves like he's a political candidate and shame the devil if he says anything. Whereas Peyton Manning does have a bad habit of, if you get under his skin, I think I've had some pretty good years. If you ask him, like, hey, what's going on? You've gotten picked off four times in the last two games. What's going on? I think my resume speaks. You can get under his skin pretty
good. It's true. And Peyton Manning, great commercial actor too, Wes, as you attest to, correct?
Worst commercial actor ever.
All right, let's get back. So, listen, let me throw mine out there. And this hurts me a little bit because they are, and Dave, I don't know if you're aware of this, the official team of around the NFL this year is the San Diego Chargers, the Superchargers. I don't have a good feeling about the second half. They're 5-3 now, coming off back-to-back losses. They are at Miami this week. To me, that's a coin flip game. Then they have their bye. Then they have Raiders and Rams at home, so that sets up pretty nice. You got to win both those games. Then it gets real tricky in the back end, the last five games, at Ravens, home to Patriots, home to Broncos, at Niners, at Chiefs.
Woo!
So if they don't take care of business in the next 3 weeks, if they lose two of three in the next 3 weeks, which would be a surprise, especially with the Raiders involved, but not absolutely stunning, then they're in pretty hot water, I would think.
That's the toughest closing stretch, I think, in the entire NFL. We do have an article about this up.
Ooh, NFL.com.
/midseason report. It's in there somewhere. And look at all those
games.
Why
did you talk over my hesitation before I said
I forgot.
It's my bit.
I forgot the bit. It's an old bit.
Okay.
I think they're going to be the underdogs in five of those games. Five straight games possibly to end the season. They're not going to be favored in any one of those.
Did we look at the schedule before we named them the team around the NFL?
I did one worse. I picked them to win the division, the division that includes the Denver Broncos. The thing I didn't count on was the Chiefs being relevant. I mean, I said last week, I feel like no one – it talks about the Chiefs. It's really weird if you think about it. This team is now 4-3. They've won four in a row. And nobody says boo about them. And what that says to me is it proves we all like the narratives that we establish. And then if something goes against it, it's like, well, but I've written and talked a lot about that. Now I don't really want to acknowledge
Wes,
I was wrong about
Wes
that.
Is vigorously
nobody talks about
them
because every team in the league is 4-3.
All
it's
right,
not that unique to be the Chiefs.
And by the way, we've talked about this. Especially tough if they get San Francisco week 16, which they have. We've talked about San Francisco could be back to what we thought they were last year by then when they get a little more healthy and start to hit their groove as we expect them to do potentially.
I think Chargers Chiefs, that's the early favorite for the Sunday night football week 17 because they don't care. It can't go for ratings. They just go whatever game puts a winner into the playoffs, and that feels like that's going to be for the
maybe 16. Andy Reid will field his team this year.
Andy Reid, Wes, your team.
I look at this a little bit differently. If you're a great team, it doesn't matter too much what your schedule is. You're going to win more than your fair share of games. If you're a team that's been kind of lucky so far and you've been winning a lot of games in which one or two plays is a turning point, that's the Arizona Cardinals. And they have a tough schedule. They close versus Seattle and at San Francisco. That's really tough. I don't see them – they are what their record says they are, but they've also been lucky, and over the course of the year, that tends to even out a little bit. I think the Cardinals fall off.
You could almost say that whole division has a tough slate at the end because they all play each other. In Arizona, they still have Dallas. They have Kansas City. They have Detroit. San Francisco actually looks like the one out of that group that's sitting pretty. They've gotten two division road games out of the way already.
For a team that's played every game close, at Atlanta is no gimme.
Well, and you know, first of all, this is a massive weekend for some juicy matchups with obviously Brady and Peyton, but neither of those guys really needs it. I think both of those guys or both of those teams are obviously at least going to win their division. For seeding, though, it might be another matter. Ravens-Pittsburgh big, but the biggest of them all is that Cowboys-Cardinals game. I feel like whoever loses that game is in some their season, they're not off the rails, but they're in legit jeopardy of losing their division. If the Cardinals lose that one, to Wes's point, you know, the everybody who assumes, well, the Seahawks and 49ers are ultimately going to catch the Cardinals. That's going to happen, except those two teams haven't played each other yet. So if they split that series, that puts them at four losses. The Cardinals have one. Even if the Seahawks were to sweep them, they still would have one game up on them. So the Cardinals need to beat the Cowboys this weekend. Conversely, if the Cowboys go into a two-game skid.
See, their schedule's not too bad, but we did these bold predictions for the second half, and we wrote them on Monday, and mine was that the Cowboys won't make the playoffs, which is looking a little less bold now that they've lost to the Redskins and Romo got hurt. I mean, I could see that happening. Mm-hmm. They're a team I don't see many gimme wins.
All right. Great work, guys.
Thank you, Dan.
I thought we all and really to you. Brought the heat, dropped the hammer on the people. All right, let's get into the Thursday night game. This is a good Thursday night game. And if I may get a lollipop from some shadowy league figures, the first NFL Network game, no CBS. Sorry, Les Moonves. The NFC South showdown between the Saints and the Panthers is only on NFL Network, and it's a good game, very good game. It will decide who moves into first place in the division. The Saints maybe got back on track with a big win at home over the Packers and certainly looked explosive, including Wes's boy, Mark Ingram, going off. In Wes's boy of stable of boys, excuse me, Mark Ingram. And the Carolina Panthers, tough loss to the Seahawks in their own building. Now they have a big home game against the Saints, who stink on the road. How do we see it?
I just wrote up this preview for the site. The Panthers have a problem up front. They're without both starting guards and left tackle Byron Bell. They're starting a rookie undrafted free agent at left tackle. Junior Collette is going to come off that side just licking his chops.
Saints defense hasn't exactly traveled well in a while, like this entire year. This was a tough one to pick. Because a road team – The Saints have had problems in Carolina regardless over the last few years. And on a short week, I had a hard time picking the Saints, but I still did anyways because it just seems like they're getting their mojo back together. And Carolina's is not a very good team. I think we're still thinking that there's parts of last year left, but all they are is Cam Newton, and that's about it.
Yeah, but that's a massive factor, obviously, is Cam Newton. I think that – and he's an inconsistent performer, obviously. He's inconsistent with his accuracy, so you never know when that's going to benefit the team. He could explode on Thursday night, the, you know, prime time, all that, and have a great game. But that said, Wes was the first one to call out Mark Ingram, and if they can stick to banging him like that against the Carolina front there, I think they should win that game.
Here's I picked the Panthers, and you guys made good points about there may not be that good a team, but yes, the Cam Newton factor, and then cannot sleep on the road element enough with the Saints. They're 0-4 on the road this season, and they've lost 10 of 12, including the playoffs. They're not just a mediocre road team. They're one of the worst road teams in football, and even coming off a great win on Sunday night, I can't get behind them, and I won't pick them on the road until they win a big game, which this would be.
And by the way, Aaron Rodgers doesn't get hurt in that game. I'm not 100% sure that they even win that one.
Carolina played pretty well last week against Seattle, I thought, for the most part. I mean,
that's a misleading final score. Russell Wilson blew two touchdowns in one series. Marshawn Lynch dropped a touchdown going into halftime.
You can make those cases in every game both ways.
Seattle should have scored 25 or 30
Carolina
points.
Carolina fumbled while on a handoff on the 10-yard line, and Kelvin Benjamin dropped a touchdown. You know, you can find that in both things. They actually – I don't know if they found – their defensive line is so bad this year compared to last year, but Coney Ealy started showing up a little bit last week. Maybe a little –
here's the
Coney
problem.
Ealy
sighting. Let me say this. This is something – this has been my big observation or speculation, I should say, of the week, and talk to Nate Burleson, who obviously lives up in Seattle and knows Marshawn Lynch and the rest. The premise that now Percy Harvin's gone, now they get back to Seahawks football. What got them there last year, just pound 25, 30 times a game, Marshawn Lynch. The problem is Marshawn Lynch isn't the sort of guy, knowing he's on his way out the door, The organization's made that clear. Hey, tote the ball for us. We're going to run you into the ground because we have no future with you. So just do our bidding for the next couple
Which
months
Which is such
here.
A cold sentiment, by the way,
it
as
is.
An aside. We always hear that all the time about a guy
Never.
In the contract year. Just run him. You don't need him next year. It's like, God,
hey,
I don't get what the point is here. So if they ask him to carry it 25 times, he's going to say, nope, my limit's 20. I'm done for the day.
No, but he is a banger. But the nature of
he's averaging more yards per carry this year than last. The only reason he's not having as good as a year because he's not giving him the ball.
That's Damashek's prediction. There is a gathering cloud. Listen, he's petulant on social media. With the
Fair.
Towards the team, and jump at the White House. What kind of, who do you think this guy's gonna be? Whatever you want, whatever you guys need. Just
I have no doubt that he's petulant. I don't know how this theory actually
not running hard. How about that?
Well, wouldn't that show up in the stats somehow or on film?
No, I didn't say it had begun yet.
Oh,
I'm saying
okay.
As the season wears on.
How is that
going
to help his value, though, if he wants to make money next year?
I don't
year.
Think he – that's my point. You have professional integrity, and that's what carries the day. Hey, I want to have a career beyond 2014, ergo I'm going to put out. I think Marshawn Lynch is the sort of guy who's like, yeah, you want to mistreat me? I'll show you. I'll mistreat you.
Meanwhile, poor Panthers fans out there wondering that, you know, they used to be the team of ATL. Now they don't even get talked about in their own segment.
It is what it is. They're not exciting this year.
Yeah.
We don't reward mediocrity.
And by the way,
I don't know what they're good at. They're not good at anything.
It will be a fascinating case study, by the way. Marshawn Lynch in free agency entering his age 29 season. Somebody's going to probably overpay for him.
If the Saints do win this game, suddenly your Super Bowl pick, which looked insane, at least they're going to look like heavy favorites to have a home game in the playoffs if they just win this game. It's almost like the first half never happened.
They need three, though.
If they get the defense getting a little better.
That's exactly right. And there's no dominant team in the NFC.
Right. Well, then you're the four seed at best probably in their situation. But it's almost like the first half of the season doesn't happen if they win this game.
Not really. They could finish with the NFC's best
record. How about
Tiva
Mike and his gang over in London? If they pull that one out against the Lions on Sunday, they're right in the middle of the crummy NFC South race.
Yeah.
They could absolutely win that terrible
division.
Just
for scorekeeping, you have the Saints in this game.
I do too.
Wes, Greg
the
does.
Saints are my power Saints. Pick this
I have
week.
The Panthers.
Duracell power Ooh. Pick.
I thought you'd be with me, Dave, by the way.
I always love Cam Newton, and he gives them the so-called puncher's chance, but I just think practically Mark Ingram banging that defense on the ground all day is going to win out.
I didn't miss that plug at all. Great battery.
You might get a hero pick out of this. Sessler's also on the Saints.
Tasty. And that's it, gentlemen, for another edition of the Around the NFL podcast, the Wednesday edition. Dave Damashek, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, the time was gay. I thought it was a lot of fun. Sorry I talked a lot.
No, it was expected, and we enjoyed it. So it's like a supersized version. You, Dave Damashek, football program, the Sheck Report, Football Baby, NFL, all sorts of great Dave contact. And that's it for the show. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the mailman, the boss, and TD behind the glass. Until Thursday.